Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're tackling something, well, we all kind of get at bribery, but we're looking at it through a really surprising angle. How just waiting in line for public services can shape this behavior.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Think of this as your quick way into understanding this mix of economics, psychology, and culture.
Exactly. And we've got some really great research to dig into with you today. It's a paper called Jumping the Queue, an experimental study on cultural differences in bribing attitudes among Greeks and Germans.
Wow. Okay.
It gives a remarkable look at these, you know, often hidden forces.
So our mission here is pretty clear. Pull out the key insights from the study, understand the maybe unexpected ways bribery works, and see how culture plays into it.
Right.
No heavy academic talk, just the stuff that makes sense. And guiding us is our expert, who's fantastic at breaking down complex research and explaining why it matters to you.
Well, it's crucial to remember the real world behind this. The paper itself mentions some pretty striking examples.
Like what?
Well, there's the UK investor who apparently waited 25 years for permits in Crete. That kind of delay just screams potential for corruption.
Absolutely. 25 years.
Or the Greek entrepreneur. A 10-month delay for essential permits because they wouldn't pay a, quote, speed bribe. And it's not just stories. Organizations like Integrity Watch, they report that in countries with high corruption levels, paying a bribe often feels like the only way to get things done.
Okay, so let's get into the research itself. They use this thing called a queue jumping game. Can you sort of paint a picture of how that works?
Sure. So imagine a round of the game. You've got four people. One's playing a public official, the other three are civilians. And this repeats over several rounds.
Okay.
Everyone starts with some play money. The key thing is this queue for some public service. Mm-hmm. If you're at the front of the round, you get paid.
And if you're not?
Second or third position. Nothing for that round.
So the obvious goal for the civilians is get to the front of that line. How did the line work? You know, normally, without any funny business.
Right. Without bribes, it was simple. First come, first served. Whoever was first moves to the back next round. Second moves to first. Third moves to second.
A predictable cycle. Everyone gets a turn eventually.
Yeah, unpredictable.
But then they brought in bribery. What specific kinds of bribes were they studying?
Okay, this is really important. They looked at two distinct types. The first was the queue jumping bribe.
Right.
This is offered by the person right at the back, third place. They offer it to the official. If the official accepts, boom, they jump straight to the front in the next round.
Okay, straight to the front. Was there a cost?
Yep, cost 20 units of their game money. And interestingly, this included a 5-unit cost meant to represent like a societal harm, a welfare loss because of the corruption.
Ah, so it wasn't just a personal transaction. It had this broader negative impact built in. Okay, that's the active bribe, cutting ahead. What was the other one?
The second was the counter bribe. This is offered by the person in second place.
The one who's almost at the front.
Precisely. They'd really only think about doing this if they suspected the person behind them, in third place, was going to offer a queue jumping bribe.
So it's defensive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's an offer to the official saying, hey, let me stay here. Let me move to the front next round like I'm supposed to, even if that person behind tries to bribe their way past.
Interesting contrast. One's offensive, one's defensive. So what did the researchers think would happen when they set this up, especially with Greeks and Germans? What were their hypotheses?
They had a few key ideas. First, thinking about that offensive versus defensive thing, they figured the moral cost, that feeling of doing something wrong, would be higher for the queue jumping bribe.
That makes sense. Cutting in line feels worse than just trying to hold your spot.
Generally, yeah. That was hypothesis one. Then hypothesis two is about the cultural differences.
Based on those corruption perception scores.
Exactly. Germany ranked very low on perceived corruption in 2019, Greece much higher. So they predicted that in the groups with just one nationality, all Greeks or all Germans, the Greeks would bribe more often, both types.
Because maybe there's less general disapproval of it in the background culture.
That was the reasoning, yeah. A potentially lower societal barrier in the Greek context might lead to more in-game bribery.
Okay. And their third idea about mixing the groups.
Right. The intercultural groups. Their hypothesis was that whoever was in the minority, say, one Greek person with mostly Germans or one German with mostly Greeks would start to act more like the majority.
So they'd adapt. A Greek might bribe less in a German group. A German might bribe more in a Greek group.
That was the expectation, yeah. Conforming to the group norm.
Okay, those were the predictions. Let's dive into what actually happened. What about those single nationality groups? Did the Greeks start out bribing more?
Yes, initially they did. In the all-Greek groups, bribery was more frequent than in the all-German groups, mostly driven by that queue jumping.
Okay, so far, so predicted.
But, and this is really interesting, it didn't stay that long.
Oh.
Over the course of the experiment, the Germans actually started bribing more.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, their bribery rates increased. And by about the midpoint, the difference between the Greek and German groups pretty much vanished. They converged.
That's quite a twist. So the Germans adapted to the game environment, maybe. What about the types of bribes? Was there a difference in preference between queue jumping and counter bribing in those groups?
Oh, definitely. Big difference. In the all Greek groups, queue jumping was way more common than counter bribing. Significantly so.
Okay.
But in the all German groups, the rates were much closer. They used both types more evenly.
So that points to a real cultural difference in how those two actions are maybe perceived or utilized.
Seems like it. The data visualizations in the paper really show this divergence quite clearly.
What about the moral cost idea? Did they find that queue jumping felt worse?
Yes, that held up for both nationalities. Their analysis showed pretty strongly that offering that bribe to cut ahead carries a significantly higher moral cost than the defensive counterbribe.
Okay.
Even if both happened equally often, the underlying feeling of wrongness was stronger for queue jumping.
That fits with intuition. But you mentioned something earlier about the Greeks perceiving the counterbribe differently. That sounds intriguing.
It really was one of the standout findings. While both groups felt queue jumping was pretty bad, the Greek participants actually rated counterbribing as more socially inappropriate or unacceptable than the Germans did.
Wait, so the Greeks felt worse about the defensive bribe?
According to the researchers' analysis of the social appropriateness ratings, yes. Their statistical measures, these gamma values they calculated, showed a significant difference there.
That seems backward. If they felt worse about the defensive move, why were they initially doing more of the offensive queue jumping?
I know, it seems paradoxical, right? But the researchers offer a really thought-provoking explanation.
Okay.
That higher moral discomfort with counter-bribing among Greeks might, strangely enough, push them towards more initial queue jumping.
How does that work?
Think about it. If you feel particularly bad or socially awkward about constantly having to make these defensive counterbribes to just hold your place in a slow system,
right,
you might be more tempted to just make one big decisive move, the queue jump, to get to the front and get the service, bypassing the need for those repeated, uncomfortable defensive actions.
So it's less about being opportunistic and maybe more about escaping a situation where you'd constantly have to do something else you feel is socially awkward?
Possibly.
Yeah.
It could be framed as, I need this service, the system is flawed, this is the necessary step, rather than engaging repeatedly in the counter-bribing, which they perceive as more socially inappropriate. It highlights how feelings about fairness in one type of action can sort of spill over and influence another, potentially less fair action.
That is a really fascinating psychological twist. Okay, so shifting gears to the mixed groups, the intercultural ones.
Hmm.
Did the minorities actually adapt to the majority behavior?
Well, the evidence for that was pretty weak, actually.
Oh.
They only found a little bit of evidence that Greek minorities and German majority groups maybe reduced their queue jumping slightly. But the German minorities in Greek majority groups, no significant change in their bribery behavior at all.
Huh. So that whole idea of when in Rome, do as the Romans do, didn't really play out strongly here.
Not strongly, no. It suggests these underlying cultural attitudes towards bribery might be, you know, stickier, more resistant to immediate situational pressure than maybe hypothesized.
Interesting. Okay, what about the bottom line, the money? Did who you were or which group you were in affect how much you earned in the end?
Yes. Definitely. There were clear differences. Overall, Greek participants earned significantly less in the game than German participants.
Okay.
And also being in the minority, whether you're Greek or German, meant you earned less than the majority members in your specific group.
Why do you think that was? Why did Greeks and minorities earn less?
Well, for the Greeks overall, it might tie back to the idea that higher levels of bribery in a group might actually reduce the total pot or the overall efficiency within the game's rules. Less total benefit to go around.
Right. The societal cost may be adding up.
Potentially. And for the minorities earning less. The researchers suggest it's likely because they didn't fully adopt the bribery norms of the majority.
They didn't play the game the same way.
Exactly. The data indicated minorities tended to bribe less frequently than the majorities in those mixed groups. So by not engaging in the dominant behavior, even if that behavior is bribery, they ended up with lower individual payoffs.
That really underscores how powerful group norms can be, even when they're, well, corrupt norms. You can be disadvantaged by not participating.
Precise.
Now, this was all done in a lab, a controlled setting. Did the researchers talk about the limitations of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're clear that a lab game simplifies reality. Things like, you know, the official isn't just accepting or rejecting. They might have their own motives.
Right, or the risk of getting caught and punished.
Exactly. Penalties, uncertainty about waiting times, the official's own strategy. None of that was really in this model. They suggest future work could look into those things.
Makes sense.
Like adding uncertainty, maybe sanctions, modeling the official's choices more deeply, or even trying to figure out what people believe others will do.
So based on what they did find, what are the practical takeaways? What could, say, a public administrator learn from this?
A couple of key things. First, it reinforces the idea that long waits fuel bribery. Both queue jumping and counter-bribing become more attractive when the queue is just dragging on.
So efficiency matters. Faster service, less incentive to bribe.
That's the implication. Making public services genuinely faster could be a powerful anti-bribery tool. Second, they highlighted that people who refuse to bribe might just get stuck indefinitely.
The perpetually disadvantaged?
Right. So administrations could potentially use data analytics. Look for applications that are taking way, way longer than average. Those outliers might signal someone being pushed back by queue jumpers.
A way to spot potential victims of the system's failures.
Exactly. It could help target anti-corruption efforts more effectively.
Okay, bringing it all together then, what's the single most surprising or maybe thought-provoking thing for you personally from this research? Something you think our listeners should really chew on?
For me, it's definitely that paradox we talked about. The idea that feeling worse about the defensive bribe, the counter bribe, could actually lead to more of the offensive queue jumping bribe.
Yeah, that's counterintuitive.
It really makes you think about how our moral wiring interacts with flawed system, doesn't it? And also the finding that minorities who don't conform to the group's bribery norms end up worse off financially, that raises big questions about fairness and the pressure to conform. So what does this all mean for you?
That is a great question to leave us with. It really makes you wonder, could understanding these sort of hidden drivers and cultural twists actually help us design fairer systems, not just for queues at the DMV, but maybe anywhere where we're metaphorically waiting in line?
Exactly. It opens up avenues, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Thinking about fairness perceptions, cultural context, how effective different anti-corruption measures really are when you factor in these human motivations.
Well, this has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you for taking this deep dive with us. It's given us, and hopefully you, our listener, a lot to think about.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us as we explored this intricate look at bribery and behavior.